ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Hare Krishna. Good morning, everyone. Today we're... Is that on? Today we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 11. Very nice selection, two sections of this chapter, chapter 11, that we'll be going over. Very interesting descriptions about Lord Krishna's entrance into Dwarka. So we'll chant together text number 7. So the word meanings Bhavaya, for welfare, na, for us, tvam, your lordship, bhava, just become, Vishvabhavana, the creator of the universe, tvam, your lordship, eva, certainly, maata, mother, ata, as also, surhit, well-wisher, pati, husband, pita, father, tvam, your lordship, sat, guru, spiritual master, na, our, Paramam, the Supreme Cha, and Daivatam, worshipful deity, Yasya, whose Anuvritya, following in the footsteps, Kritinya, successful, Babu Vimam, we have become. Bhavashyanas Tvam Bhava Vishva Bhavana. Tvam eva matata srihit pati pata. Tvam sad guru na paramam cha daivatam. Yashyanu vritya kritino pabhu vimam. Bhavayat nastvam bhava vishva bhavana. Tvam eva mataha srihit pati pata. Tvam sad guru na paramam cha daivatam. Yashyanu vritya kritino babhu vima. Mayanastvam bhava vashu bhavana.
Oh.
else? Okay, so the translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. O Creator of the universe, You are our Mother, Well-Wisher, Lord, Father, Spiritual Master, and Worshipful Deity. By following in Your footsteps, we have become successful in every respect. We pray, therefore, that You continue to bless us with Your mercy. So I'll read the short purport here. This is, I know sometime back I gave a class here and we read the verse in purport, and I said that I don't know how there could be a more inspiring or encouraging purport, but I think I found it in this one. This is a very, very wonderful purport, very reassuring. So Srila Prabhupada says, the all-good personality of Godhead, being the creator of the universe, also plans for the good of all good living beings. The good living beings are advised by the Lord to follow His good advice, and by doing so they become successful in all spheres of life. There is no need to worship any deity but the Lord. He is all-powerful, and if He is satisfied by our obeisance unto His lotus feet, He is competent to bestow upon us all kinds of blessings for the successful execution of both our material and spiritual lives. For attaining spiritual existence to human form is a chance for all to understand our eternal relation with God. Our relation with Him is eternal. It can neither be broken nor vanquished. It may be forgotten for the time being, but it can be revived also by the grace of the Lord, if we follow His injunctions, which are revealed in the scriptures of all times and all places. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Kananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmaya Shri Gurave Namaha. Do you find that encouraging, that purport? I certainly find it very encouraging. And the reason why I find it encouraging is the subject matter of our discussion this morning. We're going to try to delve into personalism, try to really understand what it means and understand why Prabhupada is Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschachade Satarani. He's come to save us from impersonalism, because that sort of pervades our existence in the material world before meeting the pure devotee of the Lord and Lord Sri Krishna. So let's delve into personalism and what it means. So there are two sections of this chapter, verses 6 through 10, and then 19 through 23. So we'll go over both of them, obviously, specifically referring to particular verses, like this one, text number 7. This verse and verse 6 are introducing, the citizens of Dwarka are addressing the Lord, and they address Him in terms of Him being their protector. But it's a very personal and heartfelt type of protection that's being sought. I mean, we're protected in our lives, you know, say by the Gainesville Police Department, right? We're protected. If something comes up, we can, you know, call them and they'll do something. But it's not so personal. I mean, it's not such a personal interaction that we have with them, sort of impersonal. And a lot of the protection that people seek in the world is like that. But when we talk about the protection of the Supreme Lord, we should understand it in very personal and heartfelt terms. And that's what we get in this text number 7 here. The translation again, O Creator of the universe, you are our mother, well-wisher, Lord, Father, spiritual master, and worshipable deity. So, these are the terms in which we can understand how the Lord is protecting us. Just like our mother. In many of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's songs, he introduces this concept where you are my mother, you are my father, you are my brother, like that, addressing the Lord like that. Entering into the feeling of the relationship with the Lord in those types of relationships. So when we're talking about protection, and we say that you are my mother, what does that mean? What does it mean? What type of protection does a mother give us? Anybody can say what type of protection a mother gives us? Let me, go ahead. A caring, mothers give us care and emotional support. Correct. I have one. I happened to be in a bank one day, and I saw a mother with her newborn child come into the bank. And it just struck me that how fortunate we are that when we come into this world, we have somebody that cares for us, you know, someone that's willing to make all kinds of sacrifices for us and shower us with not only the physical care we need, but the emotional care and love and everything. They say that the child's not hugged so much by the time they're 5, you know, they're ruined for life or something like that. So this is a mother. This is a mother. And this is the type of protection a mother gives. That emotional support, you said. Anything else that mothers give us? They're always anxious to make sure what? Yeah, that we get enough to eat, you know, right? So a mother, we talk about protection, and a mother, it goes hand in hand with, you know, being provided for, that we'll have enough to eat, that our bodies will be nourished. That's what protection of a mother is meaning. So that protection is the type of protection that the Supreme Lord gives to his devotees. He gives that type of thing. But that's not all, because next here it says, well-wisher. What kind of protection do we get from a well-wisher? A friend, let's say. Anybody can say? A protection from loneliness, association, companionship. Very nice. Who can do without that in life? Thank you. Anything else? Yes. Yes, directing you to what's in your best interest. We were just coming here in the car, and I was telling my wife that I gave class in Alachua the other day, and I forgot to chant Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And one devotee, he came up to me afterwards and said, you know, Prabhu, I want to tell you, you forgot to chant Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. That wasn't Pushkar. But the point is that my wife made the point that, well, he's your real friend. Because he feels close enough to you, he can come up and tell you what's for your best interest. You know, like, well, Prabhu, you know, you forgot to do this. All the rest of the whole room, I understand now that, you know, I got some way to go to make friendships with them. Because only one person could come up and tell me that. But that's a well-wisher. A well-wisher will be able to come up and do that for you. Because they feel close enough, right? It has to be some closeness in the relationship with somebody to do that. Otherwise, it may be taken in a wrong way. So that is another type of protection that the Lord gives us. Very personal and heartfelt. Let's just skip over the Lord right now. He's next in line there. But Father, what type of protection does the Father give you, give all of us? Anybody can say? Financial, yes. He works hard to support us. It's like the bull. The bull is our father. He plows. He works hard, yes. Yes. Physical protection, safety from danger, yes. Very good. You had something? All right, okay. Okay, instructs you the how to best live your life. have a father-son talk or something like that, and he sets you on the path in life. That's good. I like that. Christian group. Okay, right. Discipline. If you go astray, the father's there to make sure that the son grows straight, not crooked, right? So that discipline is necessary sometimes, and that's a form of protection. It's a form of protection. Think about that and how that might change our perception of God. Because a lot of times people blame God when things go wrong or there's some correction in their life or there's some rules and regulations they have to follow. You know, they feel confined. But in actuality, it's helping us to grow in the right way, like a father would groom their son or daughter. Yeah. Anyone else have anything else on a father? Okay. Yeah, I think that one other element for a father might be like an elder. You know, an elder in the family or in your life to give you advice. This is where it's not mentioned here, but as I said, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in his songs, he often talks about brother. And I think brother, that relationship is so important, especially an older brother. An older brother that's, you know, I've blazed a trail, you can follow behind me, and I'm here to help you go through that. A very important relationship in our lives. And so that's also a way in which the Lord gives us protection. So what about spiritual master? That's also mentioned in the verse. Guru. Yes. Shelter. Yes. What kind of shelter is there? Okay. Yes. Yes. Takes you out of the cycle. This guru is special in that protection actually breaks the cycle of repeated birth and death and helps us get out of this material world. So very, very important aspect of protection. Spiritual master also protects us by instructing us in the science of Krishna consciousness, how to lead our lives. If we think of the role that Srila Prabhupada played for those devotees at 26 Second Avenue in their early days, he was everything to them. You know, he cooked for them, he cleaned after them, picked up after them, he gave them a place where they could come and hang out and that kind of shelter. And he instructed them in the science of Krishna consciousness. And as a result, what developed there? I mean, if you had to think about 26 Second Avenue and also, say, the early days in San Francisco, those devotees there, they have a very, very deep affection for Prabhupada. They have a very deep affection for Prabhupada. Maybe they didn't absorb the philosophy so much, or the philosophy wasn't given to them, or even all the rules and regulations that we have to follow. But what did they get from that time with Prabhupada is a very, very deep affection for Prabhupada. And that's carried them, you know, through their lives in Krishna consciousness. So, of course, Lord and worshipable deity are also mentioned here. And I think that, you know, we can understand how they offer us protection. The temple, for instance, if there was not a temple in Gainesville, I mean, what will we do? I mean, many people travel, and I know Karnamrita. What is his name? Yogeshwar's son? Namamrita. He's an airline pilot, so he flies all over the country and everything like that. And when he lands in a city, you know, it's a great opulence for him that there's a temple there. It's like an oasis. Okay, well, I'm in this dry material world. But when I go to a city, I know there's a temple there. I can get shelter. I can go there and have prasadam. I can have association. I could stay there. When we travel all over the world, we have such a lifestyle in Krishna consciousness. I was just speaking with someone about this recently. It was Chaturatma Prabhu. How devotees have this lifestyle where they just travel all over the world. But how are they able to do that? A big part of how they're able to do that is because when they get to a country, there's a temple. Krishna Kripa, he knows. I mean, he travels, you know. There's a temple there. There's a worshipful deity there where a temple is there and that provides some shelter. So that's a type of protection also we get from the worshipful deity. So this is, the point here is that The citizens of Dwarka are addressing Krishna when he enters into Dwarka, but they're doing it in a very personal and heartfelt way. It's not sort of the impersonal type of protection we think of when we think of the government or the police force or something like that. But this this type of relationship. Does anyone have any questions about that first step into personalism? Okay. Well, the other verse that I wanted to concentrate on in this first section of verses is text number 10. And I'll just read the translation here. O Master, if you live abroad all the time, we cannot look at your attractive face, whose smiles vanquish all our sufferings. How can we exist without your presence? Upon hearing these speeches, the Lord, who is very kind to the citizens and the devotees, entered the city of Dwarka and acknowledged all their greetings by casting his transcendental glance over them. So Kalakanta Prabhu put on the lesson plan for today, discussion of separation. And Prabhupada talks about this in the purport, very nicely describing how our relationship with Krishna cannot ever be broken. And I think that's important for us to know in terms of our relationship with Krishna, because our whole endeavor in life is to redevelop our relationship with Krishna, redevelop our love for Krishna. So if we can start with an understanding that we indeed have a relationship with Krishna already established, and it's just a matter of reestablishing that, then, you know, we're miles down the road in terms of accomplishing our goal in life. We have an eternal relationship with Krishna, and Prabhupada in the purport gives the example of the sun and the sun rays, how they're basically one. I mean, obviously the sun emanates the sun rays, so the sun is the predominator, and the rays are the predominated, but there's always a relationship. The clouds may come in and sort of cut the light off from the sun, at least it appears that way. Thank you. But that's just a temporary manifestation of illusion. The sun and the sun rays are always connected. They can never be separated. But if that's the case, why in our philosophy is this idea of vipralamba or separation considered to be the highest way to love Krishna? Can anybody say that? Yes, toss your hand. Very nice. I can just add on that, probably something more mundane than your explanation, but I think that it also makes the point. When I was in college, I moved into the dorm, and on one of the desks there was a little sign, little saying pasted in there behind tape, and it said, "Short absence quickens love, but long absence kills it." Now, that's different than the transcendental philosophy. That's material love, as you're saying. But spiritual love is different, as you've described. The separation from the Lord, I like that, makes our feelings go in and deeper and enhances, sort of nourishes, grows the love that we have for Krishna. Yes? Mm. Right. And this is part of Krishna's plan. I like that, how the intensity, the separation intensifies our feelings for Krishna. That's very good. This is how Krishna works with his devotees. Because, as we read in the previous verse, he has a plan that's for our good. And part of that plan is actually creating separation. There's a book by Gorgovinda Maharaj, a very nice book. It's called The Embankment of Separation. And I always was wondering, well, that's kind of a strange title, The Embankment of Separation. What does he mean, The Embankment of Separation? But after reading and studying the book, I can understand that it's talking about the bank of a river. On a river, there's one bank and there's another bank. So the river bank is called the embankment. And there are two embankments. One of separation and one of joining, sambhog, vipralamba and sambhog. And they're banks of a river, and that river flowing is the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. And so to enhance the intensity, the depth of the experience in the pastimes of the Lord, sometimes the Lord creates separation. Just like here, the Lord left Dwarka. He left Dwarka to go visit the Pandavas or for whatever reason he leaves. But does he really have a reason to leave? Does he have business elsewhere that somebody else can't do on his behalf? Well, of course, he has so many agents that could work on his behalf. But he himself leaves just to create this type of intensity so that when he comes back, he can have these types of exchanges with his devotees that have been deepened and nourished by the separation that they experience when he's not before their eyes. But it's not really apart from them. It's just they're just experiencing his presence in another way. And this is obviously seen most intensely in Vrindavan. Very pitiable scenes when Akura comes to take Krishna to Mathura, and the gopis try to stop the chariot. And all the residents of Vrindavan are just stunned because they never had any conception that Krishna would ever leave them. And here he was being taken to Mathura, leaving Vrindavan. They were just completely shocked. When the gopis couldn't stop the chariot, they just stood like statues watching the chariot go away. And it's described that by acharyas that the residents of Vrindavan, they were just like walking dead people, you know, in separation from Krishna. But all the while, as Tulsi Rani was saying, deep inside their hearts, this love for Krishna was being nourished. And it was nourished particularly by some words spoken by Krishna when he left. He said, "I shall return." And those words were the only thing keeping them alive. Keeping them alive, the hope that they would be reunited with Krishna. So, of course, this Vipralamba is a very deep and complex part of our philosophy, especially as experienced by the residents of Vrindavan. But we can also feel that at our stage of development in Krishna consciousness by having some hankering, some longing to developing our relationship with Krishna. My wife was speaking something about this just yesterday, weren't you? You want to share what you were saying? No? Okay, maybe later you'll share with us. But at our stage of development, we should want the relationship with Krishna. We should want to advance in Krishna consciousness, specifically for these very personal and heartfelt reasons. Krishna consciousness is a true personalism. It's not meant for any kind of impersonal understanding of the Lord. So, are there any questions about this before we go to the next section of verses? Yes. Yes.
You know, the citizens are meeting Krishna and they're talking about when he's away. So they're feeling, I guess my question is that they're feeling these different, they're having these different experiences of meeting and then separation. How does that work for us in our situation? I mean, is there a meeting? Is there a separation?
Is there meeting and separation in the early stages of our development of Krishna consciousness? Well, I think that examples are given which are kind of like meeting and separation. When Narada Muni in his previous birth is described in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam that he went and he was meditating in the forest and he had a vision. Krishna appeared before him. And he told him that in this life you will not see me again, but that I've appeared for you just to encourage you to continue along the path of self-realization, spiritual advancement. And so a lot of devotees also experience that when they first come to Krishna consciousness. They really, you know, get a taste, we say. And they get a taste. Something very much attracts them to, and it makes them do all kinds of things, crazy things, like give up, you know, all kinds of things in the material world that everyone else is after. They are able to renounce these things. I know it's my own experience in life, and maybe other devotees as well. If you look back at your early days, you think, how did I ever do that? Would I do that again, you know, if I was presented in that situation? Okay, that's good to hear. But that taste is almost like some bogue, you know, realization of our relationship with Krishna. But then, oh, I have so far to go. And so we kind of get a taste. We may not have it all the time, but then we search, we get it again and go back and forth. And that way we're, in a sense, the joining and the separation help us progress, you know, in Krishna consciousness. Yes. Yeah, that's definitely the mood of the gopis. Hey Vraje Vajade Vike Chalalite, Hey Nandasuto Sataha. Yeah, the Goswamis, they're always in this mood of, you know, where are Radha and Krishna? Are they on the, just on the hill of Govardhan? Are they on the bank of... So they're always experiencing those types of emotion in Krishna consciousness. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he did have this sambhog or union with Krishna. He was deep in meditation. He was having that, and the devotees were shouting in a big kirtan, waking him up when he woke up. Why have you... I was just with Radha and Krishna... Why did you bring me? He was upset like that. So, some meeting is there in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's lila. But yes, in general, that mood is that, you know, especially not in a proud way. I know Krishna. I have Krishna. I control Krishna. But always a submissive mood that, you know, Krishna, you can be present before me, or you can be, you know, absent. You can break my heart by not being present before me. Whatever, it's your, whatever you want, that's there. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mood in the Shikshastika. Okay. So let's just take a look at these other section of verses, because some very interesting things here along the same lines of inclusiveness. If you take a look at text number 19, Prabhupada says, at the same time, many hundreds of well-known prostitutes began to proceed on various vehicles. They were all eager, very eager to meet the Lord and their beautiful faces were decorated with dazzling earrings, which enhanced the beauty of their foreheads. In text number 19 and in text number 20, many different types of citizens are described. Citizens of Dwarka are described. And all of them are there to greet Lord Krishna. Now, one of the point I wanted to make about these two verses was that, and as Prabhupada makes in his purport, Krishna's mercy is very inclusive. It's very inclusive. No one is excluded there. I mean, particularly the verse is talking about prostitutes. And although I wouldn't necessarily equate these prostitutes in terms of today what we consider prostitution, but Prabhupada in his purport does talk about the profession of prostitution and how even they were accepted by the Lord. He calls it an abominable profession. Yet they can approach the Lord. He's that inclusive. And he's showing this as he enters Dwarka, a very inclusive approach that everyone has their place in worship of the Supreme Lord. Now, of course, this is Dwarka, right? And Dwarka is a very big city. It's a big city life compared to Vrindavan. But if you recall, in Krishna's Vrindavan Leela, his inclusiveness goes beyond just different types of people. In Vrindavan, Krishna would walk in the forest of Vrindavan with Balaram, and he would praise the trees, the creepers, the flowers. He would praise them. He would interact with them. He would be very inclusive of them in his mercy, just as he's inclusive of all these different types of people. Prostitutes, dramatists, artists, dancers, singers, historians, genealogists, learned speakers. All of them had their special contribution to make in the service of the Lord, and the Lord accepted that service and reciprocated with them. So I find this also very, very encouraging. Not that, how does it apply to us in our stage of devotional service? Well, we all have different talents. We come from different backgrounds. It's not that we all have to become one type of person. We used to think like that. As Kalakanda said in the beginning, we had so many thoughts. And I think as we mature, we're getting a little bit more used to understanding the differences and how Krishna is all-inclusive. But it was almost like everyone had to have the same desires in life, the same outlooks in life, the same talents in life. And if you didn't, somehow or another, you were odd. We kind of see that a little bit now, like every father wants him to play the mridanga. Everyone has to play the mridanga. I don't know about that. I mean, maybe someone doesn't want to play the mridanga. They want to play some other instrument or something like that. But, you know, it's the first thing you buy your son. You buy him a mridanga, you know, and have him play the mridanga. Maybe he wants to buy him a, you know, set of paints and let him paint Krishna or something, whatever. But the idea is that all of our individual talents should not be denied or suppressed, but rather should be utilized in the service of Krishna, just like all the residents in Dwarka. A city has a lot more type of people than you might find in Vrindavan. In Vrindavan, they're just all cowherd boys and cowherd people. And so they have a similar profession, similar way in which they lead their lives, which is very, very dear to Krishna. But he's showing in his Dwarka Leela that he reciprocates with everyone. And in text 21, it explains that that reciprocation is just, Prabhupada puts in quotations here, he says that he reciprocates just as it behooves with his different types of admirers and devotees. So just according to how we want to reciprocate with Krishna, he's ready to exchange with us on that type of a level. To exchange with our services, our individual contributions that we can make to his service. Very, very personal. He knows us. He knows us, and he's, as was described in the earlier verses, he has a plan how each and every one of us, our talents, our abilities, our love for him can be utilized in the service of the Lord. So he's showing that, and even the Sanskrit words are yata vidhi, just as it behooves the individual devotee. Now, perhaps the most interesting of all the verses today is text number 22, where it describes how the Lord is reciprocating with everyone. I find this fascinating. The Almighty Lord greeted everyone present by bowing his head, exchanging greetings, embracing, shaking hands, looking and smiling, giving assurances, and awarding benedictions even to the lowest in rank. The thing I find so inspiring about this is the fact that, well, let me start by explaining that. The other day I was giving class in Alachua and I was talking about speaking or words and how it's not really that we speak with our mouth and tongue. What we speak with is our heart. And I think you all have experience of that. Maybe sometimes you have some anger in your heart, and where does it come out? It comes out in harsh speech. Or if you have love in your heart, then it comes out in terms of affectionate words. All of our emotions are which we convey our emotions by our speech. And particularly among the devotees of the Lord, it becomes so powerful, their love for Krishna in their heart comes out in the form of instructions that can actually change our behavior and strike us very deeply. I mean, this is true of material sound vibration, but it's more true of spiritual sound vibration, that your life can be changed not just by the words, but by the heart of a saintly person speaking. And so it's not just the bodily movements which are the totality of the exchange with someone. And so similarly, Krishna, who is Rasaraj, the king of all the ability to exchange rasa with all his devotees, when we read these descriptions in text number 22, we should understand that it's not just that he's shaking hands with somebody in kind of a cold, ordinary way, but that he's expressing love. He's expressing his love by doing this. And just look at all the wonderful ways that Krishna expressed his love to the devotees there, by bowing his head. This verse almost reminds you of like of a politician, you know, or a celebrity working a crowd or something like that and doing it. But the difference is that Take a celebrity, for instance, and probably this applies to politicians too. A celebrity is always surrounded by so many lights, you know, that are trying to get to take the picture and everything like that, that, and if you've been on stage, you can understand, you can't see any people. You can't see, all you see is like the lights. You don't see any people. And so you may be doing all these same things, bowing your head, you know, greeting, smiling, shaking people's hands, but you're not really seeing anybody. So you're not really connecting with anybody. That's what material life is like. It's like we're in the bright lights, so we don't see anybody, and although we go through these motions, we're not really connecting with them. But when we read these descriptions of Krishna, he's very, very deeply, from his heart, connecting with all the people present there, to the point where they're completely satisfied by the exchange. Bowing his head to elders, exchanging greetings, embracing, and this shaking hands. The Sanskrit is kara sparsha. Sparsha means to touch. And so This kara means hands? Yeah, okay. To touch hands. It's such a wonderful thing you can think that you can exchange with the Supreme Lord by touching Him and by touching hands. And that exchange is so heartfelt that you understand His complete blessings on you. Even just by His glances, His smiling, giving assurances, these things are all very wonderful ways in which the Lord reciprocates with us in a very, very personal way, just appropriate to our situation in life. So are there any questions about these subject matters? Yes, Vaishnav?
I had an experience yesterday, so I sometimes take bus to my department. I have to pull the ring so that he stops. So I pulled the ring, but he didn't stop. He probably forgot. And he drove me all the way to the next stop, which was like downhill half a mile. So I said, I pulled the ring and you didn't stop. So in a like very dry way, he said, sorry. And he just opened the gate and I had to walk back all the way up. So I was feeling discontent in my heart for the driver. But then maybe Krishna wanted me to walk like this. So, and I felt calm. But then I was questioning myself, is it like Krishna like, interferes in so many ways in your life, or is it just happen? Or like, is it your duty to learn right things from every circumstances, or Krishna can also put you in such circumstances for your improvement?
That's a very good question. I like that. I think that it depends on how much we want Krishna in our lives. And that's actually described in one of the purports here. That, actually, it's interesting. Two of the purports end in the same way. No one is rejected by the Lord from the kingdom of God, and it remains with the living being to accept this or not. That's in one. In another place, he says that the solution is given here, and it rests upon us to assimilate it or not. How much we want Krishna in our lives, he's ready to be there fully for us at every moment of our life, if we want him to be, if we think him, if we see him like that. So I think it is, you know, important for us to see everything that happens in our life that Krishna is involved. When we see like that, then Krishna will start to reveal himself in ways to us which we didn't understand before. And our life becomes very wonderful. I mean, Krishna's always ready to reciprocate. That's what it means, that he's a person. We're talking about delving into personalism. It means that Krishna is a person, and a person means there's some exchange. Not just that he's like a statue or something, he stands there. But there's exchange. And so the more we want that exchange with Krishna, the more he'll be there in our lives. Otherwise, he just lets us go on in our own way. But if we want him, then he'll be there. Let me see if I can find that. Anyway, it's describes like that in one of the purports today. So, yeah, I think you can see that instance as what you can learn, how you should have acted maybe in a better way and not let that passion take over your heart, you know. So, okay. Any other points anyone has? Okay, we'll end there. Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.